Senate Agriculture and Vegetables Committee will come to order. Senator Barnoff, we don't quite have a quorum, but we're going to start, and they'll be slipping in here. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I was saying, I think this is my fifth year here, but I think it's the first time I've had a bill before your committee, so it's an honor to be here today.
You'll find out, Senator, that this is a friendly committee.
Very good.
Sure.
So, Mr. Chair, would you like me to begin and introduce the bill?
That's how we do things here.
Senate File 2341, I'm here to talk about today. And this bill, and before I begin, Mr. Chair, I do have a technical amendment that I'd like to offer verbally. The amendment is on line number 1.16, after the word natural, insert comma, step, comma.
Mr. Chair, I didn't catch what line that was on. I'm sorry.
1.16.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment.
The oral
amendment. I'm sorry. We're a little slow getting started here this afternoon. I'll move the oral amendment.
Senator Froby, that's okay, but we've got to have a quorum before we can.
Oh, you're right.
The minute they come in here, I'll
okay. She'll put it on the table. Right. And then we'll vote when.
Yeah. We want to keep going because it gets a long day for a lot of us.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chair, this bill modifies the definition of deceased veteran in a section of law providing educational assistance to veterans to eliminate a residency requirement for the deceased veteran. And in fact, what we're really eliminating is the requirement that when the veteran first enlisted, that they were a resident of Minnesota. In fact, in this the case that I'm going to be sharing with you today, the veteran enlisted in Puerto Rico but spent 14 years in Minnesota. So this is really about where one resides when one enlists. This change has the further effect of expanding the definition of eligible child and eligible spouse within the same statute because each of these definitions incorporates the definition of deceased veteran. So I'm here today with a constituent of mine, Heather Rivera, and Heather brought this to our attention because she was married to a veteran who served for many years and who recently passed away. She assumed that she would have higher ed educational benefits because he was under complete disability from his service. Upon registering for the U just before she was to be there, she discovered that because he was in Puerto Rico when he first enlisted, that she was not eligible. So we didn't think this was what we all would want for our veterans and their families, and that's why I bring forward this legislation today. And I would like to have Heather have a chance to tell her story.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you. Heather Rivera. First, I'm going to just briefly read a letter from my daughter. She wanted me to read this to you. My name is Fiona, and me and my dad had a dream of going to college, and then my dad died, and his dream was lost. And it was hard to get to go to lots of places without him, so I wanted to finish his dream for him. At least I thought I could. Please help my family so I still have a chance to finish his dream. And I prepared a statement myself. I'm here today on behalf of my children, myself, and especially my husband, Waldo, who's the inspiration for all of this. Waldo had a dream that he was working towards and wanted to attain. He was in the process of going back to school to finish his degree when his life was cut short. Waldo's life was filled with warmth and generosity that was hard to match. And his love for his family was immeasurable. His dream for all of us was to have the opportunity to attain college. He felt passionately about education and felt the impact that it had on his own aspirations. In March 2007, we got the devastating news that Waldo had stage 4 rectal cancer. It was determined that the possibility of this came from his service of his country in the Air Force. He was at that time granted 100% service-related disability status from the VA. On August 30th, 2009, after a courageous battle, my best friend passed away. Waldo's service to his country was for his whole country and not just for his beloved Puerto Rico, where he enlisted. It's time that our beautiful state of Minnesota recognizes his service by extending the Minnesota VA higher education benefits to his family. Waldo not only served his country honorably and died from his service, but called Minnesota his home. Waldo lived here for the past 14 years of his life. He married me, a Minnesotan, bought a home here, paid taxes here, had children here. He did incredible work for Shriners Children's Hospital of Minnesota as their interpreter throughout his illness. Please help Waldo's dream for his family be realized. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Still need one more.
And Mr. Chair, the Deputy Commissioner is here who would like to say a few words as well.
Senator Bonoff, I was going to ask somebody from the department there for it or against it. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. Thanks for hearing this bill today. You know, the current eligibility certainly doesn't keep with the tradition of Minnesota that Minnesota has established with caring for our veterans and their families. I fully support this change. It's the right thing to do, and it's not going to open the door up that much, I don't believe. We're projecting maybe a 10% increase in usage. So there's a small fiscal implication for my agency, but we can absorb that internally. There will be fiscal implications for the university and for MNSCU, but hopefully they can absorb that from within as well. But as I said, this is the right thing to do, and I'm glad to see that we're considering it.
Mr. Basicki, if it opens up the door for veterans, I'd open that door bigger if it was me. So that doesn't bother me to say you open the door up a little bit.
Mr. Chair, members, you're exactly right. You know, it's not really opening up the door so much for veterans, but for their families, you know, which is the right thing to do. And these are many veterans, as you heard testified, that have lived here for years, contribute to the tax base. They are Minnesotans, you know, and we haven't been taking care of them.
And, Mr. Chair, anytime we have a chance to thank not just veterans but to families for their tremendous sacrifice that they make on behalf of us all, I think it's important that we do that, and which is why I was so proud to carry this bill here today.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, I guess, was this is an example of how we can serve the people who wait at home.
Yes.
Is Fiona your only child?
I have 3 children.
What does she want to become?
Well, first she wants to be in the Olympics because that's going on right now. she wants to be a veterinarian, rock star, many things.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, here's Heather's son Jake is sitting over there, and he's actually a junior at Wayzata High School, so this may help him very soon.
Well, Senator Bonoff, I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward because we don't know everything that goes on around this great big place. I wasn't aware of this until you put the bill in. So, Heather, I hope we can, well, we will. We'll help you with your situation.
Appreciate that.
We're going to, if there's any other question from the committee, we can't act because I need one more person. But, Senator?
Mr. Chair, Senator Koch just walked in. Is she on the committee? Or?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for for hearing the bill. So, Mr. Chair, what will be your intent with regard to the bill? Will you keep it for your omnibus bill, or will it travel separately?
Senator Bonhoff, I've been informed that it needs to go to finance.
Very good.
That can be a very quick trip, because I know a few are set on finance, so we'll move it along faster.
All right.
We will just, I don't know, can we take any votes without a quorum? No, we'll have to wait. Senator, you can be on your way. I'll assure you that it'll pass.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Okay, the second bill on the list is Senator Marty's. Senator Marty? Senator Marty is Senate file 2740. No, that's not the one. 2632.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is the bill we were first came to me from House member from some constituents. I thought this was beer in the basement bill, but because this is comes from a obscure and we think probably prohibition-related rule in the Department of Agriculture that you cannot produce beverages in a basement, and you can produce other food there. And this bill would simply put in session law a change in that, saying that you would be okay to produce beverages in a basement. Obviously subject to the same rules Department of Agriculture has for all other food preparation purposes. And then it would be requiring the Commissioner of Agriculture to amend the rule to get rid of that old one. And the department is neutral on the bill. They were as surprised as others were about the fact that, surprised as anybody else that this even existed there. I'm not sure how they found it, but I have a constituent here who can explain his situation and why we would like to have the bill, the law changed. And this is Seth Cohenhoven. Cohenhoven, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thanks. My name is Seth Cohenhoven. We have a commercial kitchen on 2036 Marshall and Cleveland area. We have whole grain items that we bake there and sell under a line called Thoroughbred. Just to use the space wisely, we also have made it a shared space because we're not in there every day, and freezers and other things have to run 24/7. So a couple businesses have talked to us recently, one being brewing a tea and the other doing some fresh juice, fruits and vegetables. And so we wanted to expand in our basement area some of our production space so that we could accommodate that as well. So we've gone through all the necessary steps with the City of St. Paul, had that permitted and finaled, and the Department of Ag has seen that. I guess it seemed hard-pressed to come up with a prohibition statute like that. So you know, that's where we're at. We can obviously produce other things. The statute only has to do with bottling for some reason. So,
questions from the committee? Now, Senator Marty, we're short one.
I understand.
This bill will have to go to Commerce, and I think you're aware of that.
I thought we had a note I had was it would go to state and local, but maybe Commerce. I think Commerce had said they were interested until they heard it had nothing to do with beer or anything.
Senator Marty, Commerce asked for it, and they asked for it
okay.
Out of courtesy.
I thought they had changed. Yeah, that's fine. We just go
maybe
there
you can
or
meet
state
with
local
them
first.
And change it if you don't.
Right.
Beer.
Okay, well, send it there, and then they'll send it to state and local. So I very much appreciate your favorable. Here comes Senator Murphy.
Well, members.
No, we have a member.
Senator Marty, we have a quorum now.
Thank you.
Senator Skoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would move that Senate File 2632 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce.
Senator Skoy moves that Senate File 2632 be recommended to pass and been sent to Commerce. Any further discussion? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now we're going to go back to Bonhoff's bill.
Yep.
And, Senator Phoebe, you moved that, am I right?
Yes. Do I need to move the oral amendment first?
Yeah, we have to have an amendment.
Okay, so I first will move the oral amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Fobey's amendment is number, do we have a number?
It's an oral amendment.
Oral amendment. Sure.
You can repeat it if you want. Mr. Chairman, just repeating the amendment on page 1, line 16, after natural, insert, comma, step, comma. And that would expand it to include stepchildren.
Any questions? All in favor of that amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted. Now, Senator Fobey.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll move the Senate file number 2341 and ask that it be referred to
finance.
As amended and referred to
finance.
Finance. Thank you.
Senator Fobey moves adoption of amendment 2341 as amended. We will send it to finance and then see what it does from there. Everybody understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Senator Scoy, you're next.
Mr. Chair, if I could just speak for a minute from here, because I'm going to ask to table this bill. We had a kind of a mini hearing on this the other day when the commissioner was here, so I think the committee members are pretty well informed on what the effort was, and I did mention this bill at that time. I am working with the interested folks on what we're going to do here, but I think at this time everybody has kind of agreed that it wouldn't be timely to have a full hearing and a bill moving through the Senate. So, members, I would move Senate File 2744 be laid on the table.
Any discussion? Mr. Scott moves that Senate File 2744 be laid on the table for. Just laid on the table for further work. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Senate File 2664, Senator Engelbrecht, Ron Star Veterans Motor Vehicle License Plate Authorization.
I know what's on there, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We're hearing Senate File 664. 2664, Mr. Chair and members, is pretty straightforward. It's a Bronze Star license plate bill. If members would be so kind as to look through the first page of the existing law, you will see that there is many different types of license plates, special license plates, recognizing our veterans and people who have survived working in the military and different events and different wars. You can go right on down the list. Quite frankly, I'm surprised that the Bronze Star portion that we're requesting today hasn't been talked about. Maybe it has in the past. I don't know. Nevertheless, I think it's something that we should be recognizing here in the state of Minnesota, and for a notorious type commendation. I have with me today a presenter by the name of Roger Ball. I don't know what his rank and file is, but by the looks of all that he has on him, he's got some experience, and would like to make a couple of comments on this. And before that, I would tell you that in my other life as a law enforcement officer, there were certainly some concerns about all the privatization of plates, private plates out there. In fact, there was always kind of a standing joke, if we don't be careful, we're going to be catching up to North Dakota pretty soon, because about every third or second one in North Dakota's got a private plate. But nevertheless, I think this is worthy of that. I think my comrades in law enforcement would also agree with that. So with that, I'll ask Roger to make a few comments.
Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Roger Ball. I am the legislative chairman for the American Legion Department of Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. American Legion is Minnesota's largest wartime veteran service organization, with over 100,000 members and an additional 45,000 ladies in our auxiliary. We strongly support Senator Ingebretson's bill, Senate File 2664, that provides for a special recognition license plate available to those that have received the Bronze Star for their nation's military service. Thank you, Senator Ingebretson, for this piece of legislation. Mr. Chairman, you and the entire committee for your devotion and dedication to Minnesota veterans.
Any discussion? Senator Murphy?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the Honorable Mr. Ball. Thanks for being here today, and, you know, thanks on, you know, on behalf of the Minnesota Senate for the guidance that your organization has provided us on Veterans Affairs for, I don't know, 100 years or so, and personally, you personally, for at least 40 years. This issue with veterans plates, and I know that the House has some difficulty with, you know, allowing us veterans to proudly display what we feel is our heritage on our automobile license plates. You know, I just want to make a little suggestion, not for this year. I support this 110%, but maybe in the years to come. Because I know that law enforcement does have issue with so many of these different plates that are available, not only to veterans, but to University of Minnesota, Critical Habitat, right on down the line. What I think a good compromise would be was to have one standard plate for veterans and then decals where we can affix them, you know, for our specific purpose, either Purple Heart or Bronze Star, Silver Star, Pearl Harbor Vet. That would also help kind of keep the cost down a little bit. And I do believe that if it was kind of a standard plate with, you know, a symbol recognizing our service, that some of the objections in the other body may go away. So that's just something to think about for the future, and I know that I'm not going to be around here to vote on it, but I'll come back and help if that's okay. But, Mr. Chairman, I think this is a good bill. And, folks, you know, to get a Bronze Star, you have to perform well above what your normal call is. You have to do something that is exemplary. And I think this is just a small way of saying thanks to people to let them have these plates, and wish you well.
Senator Murphy, I agree with you, but there are several bills. I think we ought to send them to your committee because it takes time to get that. And I think like the idea, but you know, if you're patiently waiting for your bill, it might take a while for that to take effect. It's something for you to look at.
Maybe this will give me something to do next year, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, if I may, also included, I think may have been passed around some documentation in regards to some recipients that had received the medal. And Mr. Chair and members, and specifically Senator Murphy, thank you very much for those comments. And I would encourage you to, if I should give you a call, if you happen not to be here, and we decide to move that direction, some help and some direction from you would certainly be appreciated, and I'd be more than happy to work on that.
You know, members, just like we say, you got all these veterans' license plates. Take and stop and look at how many we got. We got ducks, we got pheasants, there's 100 different license plates for every sports facility. So if you put them together, I think the veterans should be on top rather than kind of be in the middle. So, Senator Ingebretson, do you have any more discussion?
Nothing, Mr. Chair.
Ingebretson, would you like to move the bill?
I would. I would move the Senate File 2664 be referred to Transportation.
Well, we'll have to send it to Transportation because it's a Transportation bill. Any discussion? Not then, Senator Ingebretson moves that Senate File 2664 recommended passing be sent to Transportation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Senator Cook.
Steve, are you sure it would help?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members.
Well, Senator Cook, I feel like to have a little fun today. We can drink beer in the basement with Marty. We can ride your horses up and down the outside.
You are the chair.
Okay, I shouldn't have said that, but I couldn't help. You liven this place up a little bit. Okay, yours is a horse and equine definition of clarification. And you want to present your bill, and I see we have another person here that's going to kind of help us walk through it. And my members, someplace... When we get to there's a letter that we packed in the pack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We are back. This is Senate File 755, a definition of horses. And I think to get things started, Mr. Chair, there is an amendment, and I have a slight amendment to that amendment. So if we could, if someone would be willing to offer that amendment, I would appreciate it, and then we'll get the bill in the shape.
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll move the A2 amendment, and I'll let Senator Cook explain, but I think we need to make an amendment to the amendment.
Thank you. If you'd notice, it's just two lines. On line 1.3 of the amendment, we could say that it says delete lines 13 to 15. We would like to leave in sub 3, so delete lines 13 to 15. If we could make that amendment to the amendment... and then offer that amendment, I would be appreciative.
Just offer it with that change.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'll offer the A2 amendment with the change that we're changing the number 17 on line 3 to a 15.
Okay. Does everybody understand the amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Saving this.
So adopted. Now your bill should be in order that you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so last year when Mr. Dayon brought me this, what I thought was a simple definition of horses in agriculture, I had no idea what I was getting into. But I guess as horses are the third largest livestock class in the state and about $1 billion worth of economic impact, according to the Department of Ag, I should have known better. What we have done... we are now down to a very distilled version of the bill. This is strictly a definition in regards to agriculture. The amendment took out any references to property or land. We are leaving in sub 3, which allows gives the assessors a little peace of mind, and Bill Efforts is here. Maybe he could speak to that. We just want to make this very clear and for the record and is the intention of the author that this has nothing to do with property taxes. So, Bill, do you want to address that just quickly?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Efforts. I'm the Assistant Hennepin County Assessor, and I'm here on behalf of MAAO, Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, and the Legislative Committee. And I just wanted to thank Senator Koch for offering this amendment. It brings some clarity to the definition of livestock, and it also helps us secure that there aren't some unintended consequences of such an action in property tax. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairs, last year what did come out of a lot of the negotiations, we did do a task force. And you will find in your packets a Department of Ag letter referencing that the results of that. And it was very productive. We solved a lot of issues with regard to property taxes and equine property. But at the very end of the letter, the Department of Ag states that it's still necessary in their mind, they feel, to define this in ag statute. And so that's what this does. We also have, I just would put on, Anoka Equine. You've got a letter of support from Tracy Turner, that is a licensed veterinarian and also president of the Minnesota Association of Equine Practitioners, vice president of the Minnesota Horse Council, and chair of the member of the Minnesota Horse Welfare Coalition. We also have the support of Farm Bureau. Chris Raddatz is here, as well as the Farmers Union, and Tom Peterson is here as well. We would appreciate your support for this piece of legislation.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair and members, you know, we had a pretty thorough hearing on this last year, and certainly, you know, if you have questions, we should ask them. But I myself, I'm comfortable, and I'm ready to vote on this bill.
Anybody from the audience like to testify?
I'm happy to fill in for the chair when he presents this bill.
Senator Skoy moves that Senate File 755 as amended be recommended to be passed, and it will go to the floor. Unless there's objection to that.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, where are we?
To the floor.
To the floor.
Don't need to go to taxes. I've already seen it. It needs to go to the floor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Members, next on our agenda today is Senate File 2465, Senator Vickerman's bill. Senator Vickerman?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, under the current law, first providing livestock production inputs as livestock production input means by the unpaid retail cost of the livestock production input. And what we're trying to do is figure out if you have a bank loan or a loan from somebody. All at once, your feed stops coming to feed the hogs or chickens or have that. We've got to figure out a way to keep the banker happy and the person who's borrowing the money happy. This is an attempt to try to do that. So, Mr. Chair, what I think I would like you to do is, Mr. Schoenfield, and we're into this, and I'm not too sure. There's an amendment, I believe, isn't there?
There is. We do have an amendment or two, I believe, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chairman,
Knopf, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've asked Mr. Schoenfeld, are you talking about a delete everything amendment? Should
does it include the court? Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, does
Schoenfeld.
It include the 45 days?
No, but you can pencil that in.
Then that is the amendment. It's a 45-day verbal change. Explain it.
Do you want me to explain it?
Mr. Schoenfeld, we're going to run a couple down there, and you can start the explanation while they're handed out here. You might want to just identify yourself for the record, too.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Pork Producers on this issue. And
Mr. Chairman, Senator, or Jerry, on line 1.15, I think is where you want to increase the 30 to 45. So that could be incorporated in the amendment. To delete 30 and insert 45. I heard late that this was going to happen. The amendment copies were already made.
Senator Vickerman moves the A3 amendment.
With the change.
With the amendment to line 1.15, changing 30 days to 45 days.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of that amendment to get the bill in order that I would like to have.
We have the amendment in front of us. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Vickerman.
Chairman, if there's another amendment or not.
No. No. That's it.
Okay. That takes care of it. I have another witness here who's going to kind of run through the bill and give us some testimony.
Shall I start?
Mr. Schoenfeld, did you want to weigh in?
Briefly. Mr. Chairman, members, what this amounts to is that this doesn't happen often. But we have had three or four situations this past summer with pork producers from my group. I've talked to Mr. Peterson from Farmers Union. They had a couple of members that had this problem with the dairy, and Mr. Peterson is over here, and he's shaking his head yes. Mr. Peterson and Mr. Raddatz have both offered to testify as well on this bill. And in situations in which this isn't the mid-80s yet, but we have had with low livestock prices in the last year or two some problems with people going out of business. And one of the problems we've run into is that in a few select cases, and I'm saying a few cases, we have had a situation where there has been feed cut off to animals in livestock production units. And it used to be one thing, it never is good to have any animal hungry, but when you have 2,000 head sitting in a building, it gets particularly to be a problem. And so there is presently, and has been for a long time, something called the Ag Input Suppliers Lien Bill, or lien law. It is almost never used, and I guess I can defer to the grain and feed representative to talk about that, but one of the reasons it is almost never used is the fact that it requires the bank to sign off and say it's okay to get ahead of me in a lien position, and they don't hardly ever do it. So what this bill really does is it deals with a very narrow focus, and that focus is only during mediation. But remember, mediation comes when a creditor is for closing. So it only affects things during the mediation. And in a mediation situation, unfortunately, there are times when, you know, everybody's jumping ship at the same time because there's usually not enough funds to go around. And so what this bill does is sets up for the first 45 days of a mediation after a mediation request, and mediations run 90 days. But for the first 45 days, that a feed supplier, for instance, would have a priority lien to be able to continue to feed those animals until such time, basically, that into the mediation situation, people know where they're at and what's happening. Now, if you look at the mediation law itself, and I have it ahead of me, when it was passed in 1986, this whole concept was thought about. And one of the things that it talks about in the mediation law is the fact that there is something called an obligation of good faith. And it says that parties must engage in mediation in good faith. Not participating in good faith includes, and it lists about six different things. One of the things it lists is number five, failure of a creditor to release funds from the sale of farm products to the debtor for necessary living and farm operating expenses. So under the obligation of good faith in the mediation law, it is required that once you're into the mediation process, that you would provide for the payment of feed bills, or if you did not, you'd be considered in bad faith. And then what happens under bad faith is that if the debtor and the creditor do not agree on the amount of necessary operating expenses or necessary living and operating expenses to be released, the debtor or a creditor requested to release necessary living or operating expenses may petition the district court of the debtor's residence to make a determination of the amount to be released. The court shall hear and make a determination of the operating expenses to be released within 10 days after receiving a petition. When we started with this bill, we had a 30-day time limit, and we've just amended it to be 45. And that's part of the reason for going to 45. If you read the rest of the mediation law, it requires a number of things. It says a debtor must file a mediation request form with the director by 14 days after receiving a mediation notice. Once that request is filed by the farmer, for instance, that's requesting the mediation, that is the point at which this temporary lien law takes effect. It is the point at which they get the mediation request. At that point in time, then, the mediator, the state mediator that's going to do this, says, it states that by 10 days after receiving a mediation request, the director shall send a mediation proceeding notice to the debtor. So then there's a 10-day time period, and then thereafter that, an initial mediation meeting must be held within 20 days of the notice. So it's 10 days plus 20 days, and if you get into court-supervised mediation, it's at least an additional 10 days before you can get that done. So that is the reason we asked to change it from 30 to 40, so I'll clear that up kind of up front. What this bill does is simply this. It simply says we are not asking the bank or the AgStar or whoever it is, that they must absolutely necessarily continue to feed the livestock. What it does say is if you're not going to get out of the way and let a priority lien with the feed company take over for 45 days so that we can make sure that those animals are fed. And our major concern from the pork producer's standpoint is we can't afford, either from a humane standpoint or from a practical standpoint, to have those feeders go empty during the time that people are starting to figure out what they're going to do in what is already a bad situation. And that's really the gist of the bill. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, I guess I could I would also mention that in terms of the there has been some negotiations with people from AgStar, with Mr. Abbott, for instance, and the Delete Everything amendment is a product of that. It requires a notice that must be given from the feed company to the primary creditor so that they know that this is happening. And the other thing it does is in the existing law, there is a six-month perfection period, and it reduces from 6 months to 60 days the time that the feed company would have to perfect the lien. In other words, file the UCC and make it all legal so that they would reduce that time period. So basically, the Delete Everything amendment does those three things, that it changes it from 30 to 45 days compared to the bill. It adds in a request by Mr. Abbott, for instance, representing AgStar, that the that they would have to send a notification to the other what otherwise would be the primary creditor, and thirdly, that it would reduce from 6 months to basically 2 months, the time period which they could perfect the lien. And that's the gist of the bill. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I turn it back to Senator Vickerman. Or,
questions for Mr. Schoenfeld? If not,
Mr.
did
Chair,
I see one?
I want Mr. Zelenka.
Bob Zelenka is with us, so welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Bob Zelenka. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. We represent grain elevators and feed mills here in the state of Minnesota. We are in about 625 communities in the state. We employ about 9,000 people in the state. That's a big business, a big operation, and a big economic force in rural Minnesota. We have had some problems in the last couple of years with feed provided on credit. Historically, feed mills have sort of been part of the equation in terms of working with our livestock producers here in the state. They look to us, and, of course, we have worked with them over the years in providing feed on credit. Problem the last few years, we're running into a survey we did just recently. The average loss at a feed mill where they're writing it off is about $96,000. There's a lot of write-off going on out there. And when you get into a situation where you're approaching mediation, obviously, are we expected to be putting more money into this or not? It's a tough decision to be made. We want to do what we can to keep our customers in business. But in that period of time, we feel we need some security as well. And I guess that's what the bill seems to offer, is some security for us for a limited period of time, for 45 days. It wasn't originally 30, as Jerry had mentioned. And it at least allows us to have some guarantee of payment, maybe not initially, maybe not eventually, potentially. I know some of these things can go a long ways if there's a bankruptcy involved, but hopefully they can renegotiate their credit line and get back into business. And I guess we view this as a partnership with the lending community. By us providing the feed during mediation, it actually improves the value of the collateral, which are the animals that the lenders are holding. So we look forward to working with the lenders to help hopefully keep these folks in business and allow us to have the customers and the relationship that we've had over time. In relation to the amendments, which I was just looking at today, we're comfortable with the language in the amendments on the notice and on the time to perfect the lien. It's limited, but, I mean, it's something that certainly is doable, and we would work with our people to try to make sure that they're aware of what needs to be done in that temporary period of time.
Mr. Zelenko, and maybe this is a question for counsel, but looking at this perfected livestock production input lien, do you get a higher ranking than by the time the customer gets to this point, they may have the electric company after them, a mechanic somewhere, other liens may be in place. Do you get a priority on that particular list? Or,
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, this would be a statutory lien similar to a veterinarian's lien, for example. And I think as that works, I believe it's the first that would file in terms of the statutory liens, as I understand it.
Mr. Knopf?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'll just read the statute quickly to you.
except as provided in G, we don't have to really worry about that. A perfected livestock production input lien under this section has priority against all agricultural liens except a perfected veterinarian's lien, feeder's lien, and breeder's lien. So if those liens are in effect, this would not have priority over those, but it has priority over all other agricultural liens. And by nature of the way they're wording in the bill, it would have priority also over the lender's prior lien.
Thank you.
Just for the value of the inputs.
For the value of the inputs.
Value
yes.
of the inputs. Other questions?
Mr. Chair, I have one person on my list, Steve Johnson from the Minnesota Bankers Association.
We do have a few others on the list, too. Is Laura Lemke?
She was going to, I just got in from Washington, D.C. a couple hours ago, so she was going to cover for me if I didn't get
here.
How
are things out there?
My feet hurt. Busy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if he got out of there with only his feet hurt, he did a good job.
It was a good trip.
That's doing good.
Got beat up by the railroads, too, I might add. But
no. I do have Steve Johnson on my If the witnesses would give way to Steve Johnson, we'll bring Steve Johnson to the table. Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Sorry. Welcome, Mr. Johnson.
Chair, it's always fun to sit between two bankers.
Yeah.
Here,
don't get too comfortable there, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Steve Johnson. I'm Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Bankers Association, and the MBA represents about 94% of the banks all across the state, including almost all the banks in your districts. So thank you for your time today before the committee. I'm just going to say a couple brief things. I think Mr. Appetz is probably a little more versed on some of the issues in this legislation, but I want to be really clear that I've asked a lot of my members about this legislation, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, well, we're not going to allow the livestock to starve. We're not going to allow them to, you know, that's our collateral. We want to get them to market weight to get them in the market. So that's not what we do. So we work hard at not doing that. And I just wanted to make that clear. And we have been working with the proponents of this legislation, and we've had several discussions and meetings, and it's and we'll see if we can come to a final resolution on this. We're not quite there yet on this one. We have a couple concerns, but they have been working with us, and hopefully we can come to some kind of agreement.
Questions for Mr. Johnson? Mr. Appetz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Appetz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer, and we represent Farm Credit Services here at the state capitol. Let me just reiterate what Steve has said in terms of the working with Mr. Schoenfeld, Mr. Zelenka, and others to try to pull this together so we can reach a reasonable compromise. I want to say, in fact, we were a bit surprised when the legislation came forward because it strikes us as contrary to our own interest that we wouldn't take care of our collateral. I mean, if the hogs are out there or the livestock is out there, what we want them to do is feed out and be at the prime in the prime situation when they're taken to market. But apparently there are some situations where this has arisen, and we understand Mr. Zelenka's concern about making sure that, that those livestock are taken care of in one fashion or another. I want to say up until about an hour ago, I had serious concerns about the notice provision. If we're going to get jumped on a lien, we want notice of the fact that somebody's going to jump us. And I think we've accomplished that in following the laws that's set out. The other piece is the perfection period has been shortened from 6 months. 6 months to lay in that priority, that's way beyond the mediation period, down to the 60 days. And I think that helps bring all these issues to the table as we're going through mediation. I'm happy to work with these good gentlemen further, with the chairman further if necessary, on any issues that Mr. Johnson might bring forward. But it's good that we've gotten to this point, and I think we can go forward from here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Appetz? David Skillbred, we'll bring you to the witness table. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, David Skillbred, Vice President of Government Relations for the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. I think the comments of Mr. Appetz and Mr. Johnson are parallel to the comments and the thoughts that we've received from our members. We're very happy with the A3 amendment and the direction that that's going. We've been working with all of the people, the interested parties, and we'll continue to do so and hope that we can rub off the rough edges if there are any left and find some resolution. With that, I'll close. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Skillbred?
Thanks for your testimony. Would Chris Raddatz or Tom Peterson like to approach? Mr. Raddatz, we'll hear from Farm Bureau first. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris Raddatz, Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. This issue was brought to our attention last summer by Mr. Zelenka, and then we, in turn, were able to get it into our policy development process, bring it up to our members, and they discussed it. And then at our annual meeting, we adopted policy that basically said we support efforts to make sure that adequate credit is available for livestock farmers for the purchase of feed and other inputs. Our delegates did not say how that should be or what it should be. They wanted us to be involved in the discussions. We have been. We're pleased with the direction it's headed. We thank the chairman for bringing the bill forward and look forward to the final resolution and passage of the bill, so we urge your support.
Mr. Peterson, and then we'll open it to questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name's Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And very similar to Mr. Raddatz, we were brought to the attention of this legislation and then visited with all our members at a lot of our county unit conventions we had this fall. We talked to our members a lot about farm and lender mediation and then brought this up. And as many of you are aware, a lot of our farmers are dairy farmers, smaller dairy farmers, and it was not a good year for those folks. And I remember one gentleman in particular after a meeting talking about this particular provision, and he actually came out and followed me out into the parking lot afterwards. He told me, you know, I'm not actually a member of Farmers Union anymore because I can't afford it. But I came to the meeting and had a free meal and stuff, but wanted to talk to you about some of these issues. And he told me about his situation with his bank and the feed and had a concern with it. He was able to work it out with his bank and was able to move forward with it and everything. But he was a concern, and he said, this is a good thing. We should move forward. And we heard that from our other members, and we urge your consideration of this legislation. Thank you.
Questions for our witnesses? Senator Murphy, are you ready to vote, or do you have a question?
Both. Can we vote first? No, I guess. Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Vickerman, maybe more to the lenders in the room. This isn't going to slow down or hamper, you know, this. In ag, it's a little more free flow of credit than in other areas. This isn't going to trip any of that up, is it?
Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy, not that I'm aware of. I mean, I don't see that, but I'm not well-versed in expertise in how the credit works in that area. So I don't see that happening, but okay. I honestly don't know the answer to that. I think it's a fair question, though. I think it's an important one. Credit's obviously important to the producers and us trying to lend it out. So it's a good question. That has not been raised in my conversation with my members.
Okay. Well,
follow-up.
Well, no, Mr. Chairman, just a little statement. I really believe that we ought to pass this bill. You know, bills going out of policy committees that aren't quite intact is normally kind of it's a little taboo, but in this case, everybody's getting along and moving it in the right direction. I've got no problem. Besides that, Senator Vickerman would never bring anything to the Senate floor that wasn't, you know, all worked out. So I think we ought to just move it on we need.
Mr. Schoenfeld, did we raise a red flag for you?
No, Mr. Chairman, not exactly. I just wanted to indicate that in most cases, banks are not in a situation where they try to make animals starve or anything like that.
Why?
But there are a few cases where even they don't have, you know, there have been cases where banks have failed, and they're in a situation where they can't do much about what the situation they're in as well. And in those cases, you know, their hands are somewhat tied, too. So basically, as I said before, we're not asking them even to continue financing necessarily. It's a matter of either do that or get out of the way so somebody else can make sure that things continue. So in a short term, it's very narrowly focused. It only applies to mediation situations. But, of course, those are the worst situations where most of the people are jumping ship. So,
Mr. Skilbred.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, David Skilbred, I think that we've had a lot of discussions this year about credit issues related to other issues, so that's a good question to ask. And I think that the way that I would answer the question is that in this situation, as Mr. Schoenfeld said, we're in a kind of an unusual situation where there are some challenges economically. There's a lot of people at the table. They all have made some credit available, and now they're concerned about whether or not those bills can be paid. And so there's some competing interests, if you might say. And what we're trying to do here is to identify the problem that exists and then try to come to a process by which everybody can agree to so that what needs to get done gets done.
Other questions? We're going to vote, members, but keep your seatbelts on because we're going to go back to another one that we dealt with earlier, and we need to do a procedural move on it. So,
okay.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Senator Murphy, in a perfect world, we'd never need this. But things sometimes change over, and it'd be nice to have a safeguard there so we don't get into one of those predicaments.
Senator Vickerman recommends that Senate File 2465 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to Judiciary. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Members, we're going to go back to number one on our list, Senate File 2341. I'll ask Mr. Michaels to fill us in on the...
Mr. Chairman and members, I was just informed by the Higher Education Budget Division Chair that they no longer feel that they need to see this bill, so I think a motion to reconsider and pass as amended and send to the floor would be appropriate.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 2341, voting on the prevailing side, I would move to reconsider.
Senator Murphy moves to reconsider. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 2341 be recommended to pass and be referred to as amended and be referred to the Senate
floor. Senator Murphy moves Senate File 2341 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Happy FFA Day. Meeting adjourned.
Hoorah.
Good job. Hoorah. Right.